For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome, everyone. So I thought I would begin. I was looking for always like to try to start off with an inspirational thought. So there's a famous mashgiach. A mashgiach is a person whose job it is to inspire people. And he passed away several years ago. His name was Rabbi Shimshon Pinchas. And I thought, what would be inspirational? How can we, sometimes we talk about cleaning before Pesach and buying things, and we're not inspired. So like I figured, I'll open up the Haggadah and see what he has to say. So the very first piece that's brought here, he brings the following story. And he talks about, why did he go in this line? What made him be a person that was very spiritual and would want to influence others? And he brings the following story. He said when he was young, studying in Israel, he lived in an apartment with several other boys, and it came the night of the Bedika, and he was the only one there. The other ones all got invited out. Some of them went back home. And it fell on him to clean the dira for Pesach. And boys especially are not necessarily good at cleaning up their stuff and getting rid of the chametz. But what could you do? He felt that he was planning on staying, so he got busy and he started cleaning and he started checking, and he was working almost from the nightfall until almost midnight. And he was very exhausted and very tired, but he basically had finished, and he started to feel good. Ah, thank God, I was able to do the mitzvah properly. He was able to clean the chametz, and, it wasn't fun, but, he did the hard work, he did the mitzvah, and then all of a sudden, as he was just getting ready to wind down and go to bed the night before the Seder, he all of a sudden remembered that they have a third floor of the apartment, and maybe it's a rooftop, and he remembers that the boys go up there and they have a drink, they throw things around, and he thought, oh my goodness, nobody checked up there for chametz. And people, now if you're not going to be in an area, you don't need to check it for chametz. This is an important thing, it could save you a lot of time. Let's say you don't plan on going in your basement at all for Pesach. So you don't have to check it. You could just lock the door, tape the door, sell your chametz, and you don't have to go there. If you don't plan on going there for Pesach, then there's no need to check that area. You can just decide that that area you're going to not going to be going there for Pesach. Lock the door, close the door. Have in mind if you have any chametz there, you're going to sell it. But there were a lot of people who were living here, and maybe they would go up to the attic. And he was thinking, well, why should this be my job? There are other people who live in this apartment building. Why do I have to clean it? It's 12 o'clock at night. I got to go to a Seder tomorrow night. Then he said, well, what am I supposed to do? The law is in the Jewish code of law. The Shulchan Aruch says you need to check. So he said that at that moment he had an inner struggle. What should I do? I want to go to bed. I have the Seder tomorrow night. On the other hand, I have this attic that needs to be cleaned, this roof. So he decided, says you got to do a bedika, I'm going to do it. So he goes up to the roof, he creaks open the door, and he realized that place had not been cleaned probably ever. guys go up there and they left bottles and wrappers and all kinds of things. So he then, okay, he's going to do this, and then he realizes that before he can clean for chametz, he has to clean it first. So he goes down and he gets the bucket and the sponge, and at the end of the day, it took him almost the whole night. But he finally finished the rooftop, and he was totally exhausted. And he said that every one of his limbs he was tired. And he couldn't even think about moving, to get up to the next day. There was no time to sleep. But he said that night, when he was at the Seder, he felt a sweetness, like Hashem was embracing him, that he never felt his whole life. And he thought, okay, wow, you know, Hashem gave me this high, and he said it was there the next day, and then the next day. And he felt that because he struggled to do this job and to do it right and to do what was proper, therefore Hashem showed him, you care about my mitzvahs, I care about you. And that left a big impression upon him, and that was the beginning for him of making his Pesach special. So I was inspired by that, because I was expecting he would say, oh, I studied the Talmud and Psachim, or I did this. But he said that he felt he got a closeness to Hashem from the cleaning, which was amazing. But it's really not about the cleaning, it's about just doing what's appropriate. So many times we do things for ourselves. We're always taking care of ourselves. Now, when it comes to Pesach, we're doing what Hashem wants. He wants us to get rid of the chametz, we'll get rid of the chametz. That's we're doing the feeling of Hashem. And then finally, the Seder describes an order. And throughout the Seder, there's good and there's bad, there's bitter, you have the bitter herbs, and you have the matzah, sometimes the matzah can be chewy, and you have the whole bunch of events. And the very last thing of the Seder is Nirtza, which is that Hashem says, I love you, I desire you. And in fact, there's a custom to sing a love song afterwards, Shir HaShirim. Because what Hashem does is that when we show our dedication to Hashem, and do, He gives us so many mitzvahs, so we are just so grateful to do those mitzvahs. And I was thinking, you know, this year, you know, every year when we make the Shechianu, we're so thankful to be alive. You know, lately we had, we had a lot of tragedies in our community. You know, people that just didn't make it to this Pesach. And so, as much as we, there are things to complain about, and there are a lot of times that things, burdens fall upon us, we're just happy to be here, happy to be serving Hashem another year. And so that was the thought I had. Okay, let's begin. So we're going to talk, first we'll talk about cleaning the kitchen for Pesach, and we'll take questions just if there's something that I say that's not clear, but questions about things that you might have at home we'll save for the end, okay? That way if someone has to go, then they can go, but otherwise we'll limit it. If I'm explaining something and it's not clear and you have a question directly on it, then feel free to ask that question. So the first thing... to get your house ready for Pesach, I was thinking about this. I've learned from the we not only get our house ready, we get about six or seven different caterers and restaurants, and no restaurants this year, but different places ready for Pesach. The first job is that many times if you want to have everything for Pesach, you have to buy early, because the things run out and people have to put their orders in from the co-ops early. And when the stuff comes into the house, you sometimes don't have a place to put it. And you could end up putting your Pesach stuff down on top of your chametz or in your chametz. So sometimes the first thing you want to do is to clear a space that's clean so you could put your Pesach stuff down as it comes in before your kitchen is ready. And that goes for your freezer and your fridge as well. But sometimes you don't realize it until you've already shopped. Where do I put this? It's already, so like the first thing you want to do before you bring stuff into the house or before you put it down is to have a place where you can put it, and you know that that place has already been cleaned or it's covered, and you could put the Pesach stuff there. The next thing, you want to think about which places you're actually going to use for Pesach. So if you're not going to use a drawer, or you're not going to use an area, again, you're not required to check it. Now, there are many people have customs to clean their pots and pans very well, even the ones they're not going to use. That's a nice custom if you have it, but you're not required to do that. In other words, even though you might find old food, and whatever you're not going to use for Pesach, your chametz sticker drawers, you can just close them up, seal them off, and you don't have to worry about it anymore. But if if you have that custom, there are people that would, clean off their pots and look for crumbs and things. But if that area is not going to be used for Pesach, just seal it off. And then if you have time later, maybe you can, check it or clean it. Let's begin with the kitchen. We'll start with the fridge. So the fridge, It just needs to be cleaned well, thoroughly, you know, clean it well. Obviously there are crumbs and there's food there, and Pesach food is going to go there. There's no requirement that it be lined, the fridge. If you've cleaned it with a cleaner and you've touched every surface area and scrubbed it, you don't have to line it. Sometimes it causes problems because if you line it and it covers the vents, so then the refrigeration doesn't work properly and then the food spoils. And so what we say is a minimum, if you're going to put something hot in the fridge, then you should put something down. In other words, let's say your chicken soup is still hot after the Seder and you don't want to stay up any longer, or you can't stay up any longer, so you can just put a napkin or a cloth underneath so that a hot Pesach pot does not go directly on the fridge. But the rest of it can be cleaned with a cleaner, and it just, you know, cleaned well, thoroughly, as to the way you would want to do it. Sometimes the most difficult part of the freezer or the fridge is what they call the gasket. There's like an accordion plastic thing that goes around it, and little pieces of crumbs sometimes fall deep inside that gasket. And you got to be very careful, because if you try to get in there and like get all the way deep into that gasket, which would be that the best way, if you have a way to clean out all those crumbs, that's great. But sometimes you could rip apart that gasket, and again, you're going to have trouble with the fridge. But a quick way is that you want to get the obvious crumbs that are near the surface, and anything else that's like a little bit out of reach or hard to get to, you don't have to use the toothpick or dry. Just get like a good spray cleaner and make sure that your dog isn't going to want to eat anything that's stuck in that gasket. You know, make sure that it's been, you know, spritzed, and then you're fine. So, you know, again, you want to clean it well, you want to clean it thoroughly, but those areas that are like deep inside, and that your food isn't going to touch anyway, so as long as you've, you know, zapped it with the cleaner, that should be fine. If you can shake it out or you can get it out easily, you have a trick, that's good. But if you have to be careful not to put too much effort into something that's not going to accomplish that much for you. In other words, if you really want to get every crumb out of that gasket, you could spend hours because it's very deep and wonderful. If you have the time, great, you know, start 6 months before Pesach, you know, I'm sorry then. But it just could take a lot of time, and you really want to do the food surface areas much thoroughly and much better, and you want to make sure you have patience for your families and you got lots of sleep and all kinds of other. So you have to weigh that but a quick way would be clean the surface areas very well, give it a good squirt, and then that would be fine as far as that. The other question about the fridge we get is we don't like to throw away food. We don't have that much money, and sometimes, for whatever reason, it seems like things go on sale right before Pesach, or we have more than we can eat. And it's, some people have a custom not to keep real chametz, you know, breads and cookies, but there are a lot of things that are not real chametz, margarine, and, you know, you have to open the mayonnaise the week before Pesach, and the ketchup, so what do you do with that? So you could, what you could do is put all of them in a drawer, and then seal the drawer so that you won't go in there for Pesach, and you have in mind that you're selling that area, and that would be fine. And the same thing is for the freezer. If you have a section of the freezer and you can paper it over and tape it over and with your frozen vegetables. Now, why can't I use my frozen vegetables? Now, frozen vegetables we don't use for Pesach when we get it, unless it has an OKP or an OUP, because they make pasta on the same equipment as frozen vegetables. But on the other hand, it's not real chametz. And sometimes you can't just eat, you've got so much of it, you don't want to throw it away, you can't eat it. So you could make a section of your freezer or your fridge or drawer, tape it shut, make sure that you won't by mistake or someone by mistake go to it. If you want, you can write no, you know, not kosher, whatever you want to write. But if you do that, then you could technically still have that in your house, that section of the fridge or the freezer, and that would be fine. As far as your ice tray, that should just be cleaned out thoroughly and start over again with fresh ice for Pesach. That's fine. So that's the freezer, the fridge and the freezer. Countertops. So if you have a natural stone countertop, like granite, so then you can kosher it. So first of all, for koshering, the first rule is it has to be clean. If it's not clean, you can't even think about koshering it. if for some reason it can't be cleaned, then you can't kosher it if it has cracks or it has other areas that you just can't clean, so you can't kosher anything until it's clean. The second thing is it should be at least 24 hours since it was last used. And then the third step, there are different methods we use. For a natural countertop, you can pour boiling water over it. Now, there are different materials that are not so clear whether they're natural or not, and then there are different materials that there are different opinions on, depending on what website you go to. Mm-hmm. We don't really take a stand on those. You can speak to your, you know, if you have one of these fancy... some things are like 95% stone, and then they melt in a little bit of plastic, and then you have things that are stone, and they have like sealants all over the top, and there's... it's fine if you follow the view that you can kosher a natural, pretty much anything other than real like plastic or artificial things. There are people that say you can kosher them. Now, one tip about the koshering, let's pretend this is our pot. So let's say this is a long counter. So you've got your boiling water, you clean this, it's 24 hours, and you want to take you boil the water. Now, when you take the boiling water, you should just see that the water is moving. That's how you go. You don't go by the steam. You don't. In other words, it's what's called a rolling boil. In Hebrew, it's called male resicha.
Is that the Roman
pot or the Pesach? Oh, that's a good question. That's one of people's favorite questions.
Yeah.
It could be either. The minute is that if you use a chametz pot, you should make sure it hasn't been used in 24 hours, it's clean, and then some people would let the water overflow before they use it for kashering. Even if people use a Pesach pot, if they put chametz in it, the custom is to be kashered afterwards. So they're different, you know. But let's say you've got a pot that's good. For this pot, you're just using it for boiling water, so you could use a Pesach pot. Or maybe your stove isn't kosher with Pesach yet, so you want to use a chametz pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours and it's clean. That's fine. So what you want to do is, some people would go like this, whoosh, and then let the water flow all the way down. The problem is, the boiling water, as it goes down, it loses its heat.
Boiling.
It's not boiling anymore. And so the way the koshering works is, you pour it, instead of using gravity to make it go, you pour it and move along. And you start... you start close to yourself, and then you get further away. That's the safer way. In other words,
you
got
it close.
What?
You got it close.
Yes. Yes.
You keep saying not used within 24 hours. Is it only not hot things within 24 hours?
Not used with hot comments for 24 hours. So, for example, if you had something on the counter or something like that, that would be fine.
What about like a teapot that you boil? You know, you put on on the stove.
Yeah, as long as it's boiling water, that's fine.
Right, but it doesn't matter if it's, you know, if it's not 24 hours, it's just water is in it, there's never anything else in it. So then it's fine.
But the counter should be 24 hours to do that.
Right. Okay.
Can you use a crockery pot for that, or it has to be steel?
You can use a crockery pot, anything that the water really boils in well. Now, this same method is what you want to use for your sink if it's stainless steel, that you want to make sure the sink is clean. And you want to make sure the last time it was used for hot comments was more than 24 hours ago. Now, many times people like to say this year, sometimes people will kosher after Shabbos, but they didn't use it for... but they may have used it for cold, but they didn't use it for hot comments. That's fine. So now the same method is used where you pour the boiling water. Now, one thing about the sink, you want to try to get the faucet. Let's say this is a faucet, something like that. So you could try to pour the boiling water on the faucet, but it's very narrow. What people do is they just take the pot and dip the edge of the spout into the pot, and that's the way to get that little spout. The reason you would have to do that is because sometimes you have a pot in your sink and the spout actually sits in the pot or hits the pot when you pick it up. Now, many times you have this little squirty thing that's plastic. So we don't kosher plastic for Pesach. So you could just tape it over and not use it for Pesach, or you could clean it well and just make sure not to use it in a hot pot at all, not use it with heat, like don't drop it in, you know, if you're filling up some steaming pot or something, you don't want to, just don't do that for Pesach if you have that plastic in the sink.
The faucet filters,
uh-huh.
So we change those over, how we help with that other problem if they didn't use it
if you have one, yeah.
I mean, it's like $1.49.
Oh, okay. Now, the thing at the bottom of the sink, anybody know what you call that? The plug?
The strainer.
So the strainer really cannot be kashered for Pesach. And the reason why is because all those little holes, there's a thickness to them. And the way gravity works, even though you wash them, there could still be crumbs in them. So we get a Pesach one for that, the little drainer stuff. So that's your sink and that's your countertop. If you don't have a granite countertop or it's too difficult to kasher, you can just cover it, and that would be fine as well. And then people cook, you know, they cover with cardboard, they cover with paper, they just cover it with tin foil, whatever works.
Did I understand correctly that you use your plastic, your regular plastic, and you leave it all open, you clean it?
Oh,
hours?
No, just the squirter, and just make sure not to put it in your pot. No, I mean, we don't kasher. We typically do not kasher plastic or paper. But the question is, can you use your squirter? And sometimes even the faucet itself is plastic. A lot of the faucets, and so I'm just saying you should avoid letting it fall into your hot pot. You know, like maybe occasionally during the year when you want to fill something up or it's burning, you might put it. So if you know it's plastic and we don't catch your plastic or Pesach, or it's difficult to know. So just be careful not to use it directly with food or with a hot pot on Pesach. You can pour dirty food in there, you can fill up cold, but just if it's made of plastic and it wasn't kosher for Pesach for what might be absorbed inside it, so you just be careful not to put it close to a steamy pot.
What's your opinion about wooden?
Wood can be kosher for Pesach as long as it doesn't have big nicks in it. Like a nick that would be like a... Yeah.
So, Rabbi Stein, so you're saying the sprayer, the plastic sprayer,
mm-hmm.
you shouldn't use the hot water in it, right?
No, you can use hot water in it.
To wash the sink or something?
Yeah, just if you have a steamy hot pot, just don't let it like fall down on it or go directly in it. That would be fine. Yes.
What's
the difference between letting it fall into the steam hot water and using hot water from it?
Would
it
get the same amount of good that's inside of it if there were into the pot anyway?
I think that the part where the water flows through is going to be clean. I think the problem would be on on those little holes or on the outside of it. There are people that would change it out, you know, but it's not required technically. Okay. So this, again, so the boiling water works for your sink. If the sink is made of porcelain, then we can't kosher the sink. And so people would use like an insert, or they would line the sink. That's
the counter's corian. You have to cover that, right?
There's different opinions.
What kind?
Okay. That's your countertop, your sink. Let's talk about your stove. I should have talked about that before we heated up our pot. Now, stoves are actually pretty easy to kosher. If it's electric, you just turn on each burner until it gets red, 5-10 minutes, and then the burner itself is kashered for Pesach. Now, the in-between area on the stove, it depends on what the material is. Generally speaking, the in-between area on the stove, in between the burners, it's usually not kosher, because most people use a stove for meat and for dairy, and both meat and dairy spill there, spritz there. So if, let's say, you make breakfast, you make your matzah brei with cheese, and it spritzes in the middle, and then supper you get ready to make salami and eggs, you know, whatever, and that spritzes there, so the middle area is going to become non-kosher. So usually people just cover that area, or they're careful not to put anything down directly there. That's as far as the middle area. But what you're worried about is the burner. Now, on the electric burners, there's a piece underneath, like a metal tray. So it's best if you're able to get those inserts, those foil inserts. That's because if something falls, you'll have less of a problem. It's not an absolute requirement because you're really just using the top of the burner. And you don't have to worry about the middle piece. If you turn the burner on red hot, that, you know, the middle of it, that's fine too. Now, gas is the other kind of stove. Gas, the only problem is the grate, the grate that goes on the burner, and you want to kosher the grate too. So now if you turn the flame on for 15 minutes, that's plenty to kosher the grate if the flame basically hits the grate. So the old-fashioned stoves, the flame used to hit most of the grate, you know, within an inch or two, so you could leave it on for 15 to 20 minutes and that would be fine. The problem is today they make the kind of grates that are very long that'll hold like these big wide pots. And sometimes the grates go way beyond the flame. So the method that we're capturing with this heavy heat of the flame, it's not hitting the extended grates. So what some people do is they take the grates and they put them in the oven when they capture the oven. That's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to just put it for 15 minutes in one spot and then take it up and move it over or flip it over so that the other part of the grate gets the flame for 15 minutes. A third option is to get like a cookie pan or a sheet pan or foil and cover the whole area of the burner and turn on the flame, and it'll kasher everything under the cookie pan. That's actually very fast, because what it does is it keeps the flame down and it heats up everything underneath it. And that's another way that... So again, if you have a gas stove and you have a grate and the flame... the grate extends more than 2-3 inches beyond where the flame goes, so that that area doesn't get the high heat. So you can either, one, put it in your oven when you kasher your oven. Two, you can 15 minutes in one spot and then pick up the whole thing and move it over and turn on the flame so that the other part of it gets the flame. Or three, if you have a like an old cookie pan or something that you can cover it up, or an oil bleach, and turn on the flame, and it'll keep the flame and the whole bottom area hot. That's the third way to do it as well. Yes?
I'm just joking about this all year. I have one of those flat...
Oh, okay. We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay. Sorry.
Yes?
What I always did was I took the burner off, you know, the grate off, turned it upside down, mm-hmm. So in essence it was in the flame.
Okay.
So even though the ends didn't get it, because it was so hot, it, you know, you could say it did extend. I was taught that that's the way it is.
As long as it works. In other words, as long as it says you do get that area hot, then you're good.
Okay.
And again, you don't have to worry about the middle part where the flame comes out of. You're just worried about the grate. Yeah.
Right. The cookie sheet that you put on top, does it have to be a taste of this one, or could it be your
Hummus
one?
As long as it's clean, it could even be the Hummus one.
Okay. And how long do you keep that on top with the flame burning?
Maybe 10 minutes is enough. Yes.
I know with my family's old oven, gas oven, it also has this little centerpiece, and sometimes when it cleans the oven, like not okay, not just cleaning because it gets really dirty.
Mm-hmm.
They would clean, like we clean underneath it, so would you have to also capture that tiny centerpiece that goes on top of the fire?
No. It should be clean, but you don't have to capture it. Yes.
I have an electric stove.
Mm-hmm.
That has a stainless steel top to it. Just pour boiling water on the stainless steel top.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You might want to be. It might stop up. It'll take a few minutes for the water to get out of the gas and stuff. So let's just talk about the flat top, like a plain glass flat top. So the burner part of the flat top is easy. You just turn it on until it gets red. Then you're good to go. So the only problem with the flat tops is the following, is that sometimes you put a very wide pot by mistake on a very narrow burner. And the problem is that the rest of the glass won't take the heat. There's no way to extend the part where the burner is a tempered glass, whereas the rest of it won't take the heat. And technically it's not kosher. So the easy way, sort of the easy way, is just cover the rest with foil and make a cutout for the burners. The thing to be careful with is sometimes if it's too tight, it could scratch the glass. I've done it many times and the glass hasn't scratched. What usually happens that I don't like is that if you want the foil to stay down, mm-hmm. you use tape, and then the tape melts.
Right.
And then the melted part burns. And then you got to clean off that, you know, melted tape. But it's still relatively easy. It's just a little bit messy, and sometimes you have to replace the foil on the phone. But that's like the easy, like if you have no other method, that's the easy way. You just turn on the burners for 5 minutes till they're red hot. You cover the rest with foil, and you make holes where, make sure not to cover the vent in the back. There's a vent. And then just be aware that, you know, see what you're doing, that it doesn't scratch and it doesn't...
I have to change the colimoid.
And you might have to change the colimoid, and that would be fine. Now, there are other, in the hardware stores in Brooklyn, they have a material that has cutouts for the burners, and you just plop it down, and it's not flammable. And you just, The Ace Hardware used to have something that I just checked today. They don't have it anymore. There was like a, it's like a flat piece of metal with holes in it that you can just top down on top and then cook on top of it. One year I had a local metal shop make like little discs. The Star K recommends doing that. But it's very hard to cook like that.
Are you talking about the middle part of the gas
stove? The flat tops. The middle on the flat top. So, but if you have a question, we could talk privately about that. Let's get to the oven, because I want to have time to talk about products as well. If you have a self-cleaning oven, you self-clean, you're self-kashering, except a lot of the self-cleaning ovens don't kasher the door, if you have a glass door. And what happens is a guard comes down when you turn on the self-clean cycle to prevent the heat from kashering the glass. Because if that heat would be left on, the glass would shatter. Because the oven is made to take that 850 degrees of the self-cleaning oven, but in most cases, the glass door isn't. So the guard comes down when you flip that switch on the self-clean cycle, and your oven is beautiful, good to go, and your racks are beautiful, they're clean. You don't even have to, technically, you don't have to clean your oven or your racks if you have self-cleaning. You just turn it on because whatever's there gets incinerated. But it could be the glass door, especially if you see the guard there, doesn't get fully koshered. So there's two options. One option is to just put a piece of foil around the glass door. And again, you have the same problem. The foil might fall off.
On the inside,
just put a piece of foil. That's the easy, but again, it could fall off. But it's not... The other option is, sometimes when you cook... See if I have a door. I'm not going to use the Torah door over there. Sometimes when you cook and you open the door of your oven, the glass door, you put cans and let them sit on the glass door. So, are you not supposed to? Oh, okay. We've been doing that a long time. I guess. What?
According to the booklet, it says do not put anything on the glass door.
Really? Okay. Well, that's it. Now you have another reason not to do that. Okay, I'm glad I... So, but if your glass door didn't get koshered for Pesach, and you don't have foil on it, and you want to follow the rules and not ruin it, so don't put anything directly on. But in case you do, so then it'd be a good idea to have the foil there. Or, sometimes your oven is so full that it actually hits the glass, like, you know, if you cram several pans in and then it hits it. But if it doesn't actually hit the glass, then don't worry about the glass. So again, if you have one of those self-cleaning ovens and you can see that the glass door doesn't get kosher, sometimes you can see that it's not clean because there's like a space in between the glass door and food gets trapped in there. And there's no way you just can't get in there. It's just not designed to let you get in there. It's a shame because your oven looks nice and clean, but that glass door has like drippings inside. Take a look, it is that way. So if you don't let stuff sit on your glass door when you open it or lean against it, then don't worry about it. It's absolutely fine, no problem. But if the way you cook, you do plop stuff down on the glass, even though it's not a good idea, or if your oven is so full it leans against the glass, so then it's a good idea to put a piece of foil on the inside. If you don't do it or you didn't, I wouldn't say it's wrong, it's just recommended. Yes?
Self-cleaning cycle time. The time for self-cleaning. I think it's less than the 4.5 hours.
Yeah, you don't need the 4.5 hours.
45 minutes or something? I know. You don't have to do it for the full amount, correct?
Yeah, you don't have to do it for the full amount. What would be long enough? Once the oven is clean.
Right.
So usually you can tell by when it stops smoking. In other words, in the beginning, where you can smell the self-clean when it's burning the...
Right.
And that stops after a while. So once there's no more smoke coming out, and if you open it up and it's totally clean, if you know the 2 hours is plenty, that's fine.
So you think 2 hours? Did you say 2 hours?
Most self-clean, 2 hours is more than enough, yes.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Well, an oven that is not self-cleaning.
Okay, an oven that's not self-cleaning, so then we clean it ourselves. When you clean it yourself... So basically everything that can come off, you should try to get off. In other words, if cleaning scrubbing will clean it off, then you should try to scrub until it comes off or get a clean person to scrub until it comes off. If it won't come off, which many times over the years things have become part of the metal and they just won't come off and you've tried scrubbing it and nothing happens, you can leave it there. Don't worry about it. But what you do is, again, you try scrubbing it at least twice, and you see it's not coming off, then and you don't have to worry about it. But if it will come off, then ideally you should clean until it comes off. So what you want to do in a non-self-cleaning oven is you want to check if it's clean. You open the door, you look around, you check the racks. If they look clean, then you can turn the oven on high for an hour, technically even 40 minutes once it reaches the high temperature, and you're good to go. If an oven is dirty, that's the job that nobody likes, because scrubbing a dirty oven is just not fun. That's part of the slavery of going down to Egypt or the. Once it's clean, then it's no problem to turn it on and the kosher it just like a regular oven.
500 degrees, you do it at that time?
5 or 550, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know we do it at 500.
Oh, 500 is fine, yeah. The broiler is just a different part of the burner, but it gets hot enough to kosher.
So if I kosher just on the regular oven setting,
that's fine.
The setting,
that's correct.
Well,
okay.
My broiler is separate. So it's on the bottom. It's a separate
drawer. So now a broiler itself, the broiler drawer itself, the rack which you cook on cannot be kosher for Pesach. In other words, let's say you have like a broiler tray. You need a separate tray for Pesach.
Right, but do we have, if we know we're not going to use this, do I have to, go through all that work and just keep it closed?
You could just keep it closed or put a piece of foil over it if there's something that that's dripped down there. There are a few other things I don't think we'll have time if we're going to get to food products. You can talk to me privately about, including either barbecue grills or microwave ovens. We do have them in the book, and everybody's welcome to take a book on the way out. Okay, let's get to food. So first, I thought I would do some visuals first, because sometimes visual people remember a little better, but this is just what I had in my pantry. So coffee does not need, a regular, unflavored coffee does not need any special texture for Pesach. Instant does, not instant. Just regular, unflavored coffee is fine. Decaf always needs a special Pesach texture, or if it's in the Pesach book. This is the Maxwell House. Of course, you know Maxwell. They make the Haggadahs. They've got to be kosher with Pesach. What confuses people is it's not in the OU book. And so the OU book is great. That's this book here. It's online. Everybody recommends the OU book. But the reason why Maxwell House isn't and Fenka isn't is because they're okay. But they have a P on it all year round. Okay, P. So again, decaf is the one to be careful with. Regular is fine, and instant, you have to stick to the brands that are in the book, because when they make instant, they use something called maltodextrin, which is a corn derivative. So you stick to the ones in the list. One good thing, if you like herbal teas, Bigelow makes herbal teas kosher with Pesach year-round, which means they're not quadruple the price. That's not bad. And the tea is over here on the side of the package. And a lot of these are decaf, but let's just say this was from the regular section.
Can I ask a question? I'm assuming those carrot machines are not no good on Pesach.
That's a good question. That's like one of the top 10 of this year. Is that always when you talk about what's new, they have those K-cups. If you have not the decaf ones, but the regular unflavored K-cups are fine for Pesach. And the machine, you should run hot water through it.
Just run hot water through it.
But it doesn't have a
kosher.
Well, how do you run hot water through it? Because it won't
take the cup out.
Yeah, I haven't actually done it, but OU has a piece of it.
Oh,
yes.
So if you're at work, say, and they have a bubble machine?
That's a little more complicated. Well, a Keurig is complicated because if they have hot chocolate,
what
so that could be real common. What?
Can you run it first with hot water and then use it for regular coffee?
On Pesach or before Pesach or year round? If it's no chametz was used, you probably could. If
it's coffee machine, I mean, there might have been a phone cleaning on top of it
If they could have used hot chocolate or soup with noodles or something, or I would avoid it. But if you know
coffee machine, is there any excuse? It could have been hot chocolate.
Yeah, if it could be hot chocolate, I would avoid it. If it's only coffee, then it probably could.
Only coffee,
flavor
coffee, whatever.
Flavor is a little complicated. The reason why is that for Pesach, even a small amount of chametz, we don't rely on nullification, and flavors that use alcohol sometimes.
Even kosher flavors.
For Pesach we don't, but non-kosher Pesach flavors might use alcohol, and
Yeah.
Regular coffee is fine, though.
Okay. Regular unflavored K-cups are okay with that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But not regular instant coffee, just regular
right.
if you're making.
Yes. But there are a number that are on the list. Plain seltzer is fine. Just carbonated water does not need a taste or texture. That's an example here.
Can I ask you a quick question about the soda machines, you know, the seltzer maker?
Okay.
Can I just cover like the bottom of it, and I've never touched that little stem for anything else during the year. Can I use that for Pesach also? I have separate bottles.
As long as you can clean it well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the flavors are kosher with, or it's just plain seltzer.
I see.
Yeah. This product is on the OU book, even though there's no P on it. Again, it's not quadruple the price. It's called real lemon and egg lime juice. Also, every supermarket. This is Costco. I got this from Costco, but I don't know. Any plain real lemon is fine, or real lime. This was in the regular section. Now, plain sugar does not need a Pesach texture. Any plain sugar is fine. Brown sugar does need a Pesach texture, and Domino has an OKP, and there's one or two other brands also that's listed here. Salt does not need a Pesach texture. Just make sure it's non-iodized. This salt does not supply iodide. It does have calcium silicate, and it says anti-caking. That's not cake. It's a different mean. Caking means it doesn't clump, so it's fine.
What's wrong with the iodine?
Sea salt is fine. The iodine it has a corn derivative in it, believe it or not. Yes.
So the regular box is still
on
kosher salt?
As long as it's not iodine, it's fine. They did, some of them add this iodine and it has a corn derivative in it, and we avoid that. This I brought because it's an Israeli product. Israeli products are very confusing. Most Israeli products have 3 hectares. Okay? And you have to prepare to get the grain. So first of almost if you want to do business in Israel, you have to register as a kosher product. And they register with the chief rabbinate. And that kashrus is not very thorough. It really depends on the local chief rabbi of each city. And some cities, the chief rabbis are very religious, and some cities, the chief rabbis are not that observant at all because the city isn't that observant, or this guy just got elected. And so we always recommend that if you keep strictly kosher, not to just follow the rabbanut, which is a general overall registry. It's like a government. The governments never do anything really very well. They're adequate, but it's like the VA or something. They have, again, the regular government kashrus is the rabbanut. We recommend either what's called a rabbanut mahadrin, which is like a strictly kosher rabbanut, or another heksher. But most products we don't recommend if they only have the rabbanut, if it's an Israeli product. It should have another heksher. So Badat is the best. So this one has a Badat, but it says Lo LePesach.
Oh.
So Lo LePesach, though, doesn't mean that it's not kosher LePesach. It just means that they don't certify it for Pesach. And then this one has an OUP, which means the OU does certify it for Pesach. This year, Baruch Hashem, the Sephardic community is growing, and for the very first time in the United States, there are companies that are producing stuff for Pesach for Sephardim. So that's good news and bad news. It's wonderful that now Sephardim have things that they couldn't have, and it's wonderful that the Sephardim community is growing. But you have to be careful if you follow Ashkenaz custom not to buy something that says kosher with Pesach in big letters, and in small letters it says only for Sephardim. Or it says in Hebrew, la'ochle kitniyot, to those people that eat beans. That's like a code word for Sephardim. Now, Spicy Peach is wonderful. They try to get things that no one else has. They have tons of stuff that are kosher LePesach, but only for Sephardim. They have like hummus, that beans. We don't eat beans. And they have salads. And they have other things that are good for European Jews also, but just make sure to read the label carefully, especially if it's an Israeli product. This one I got, because believe it or not, most people don't think it's kosher. It's Tedum Concord Sparkling Grape Juice, and there's no OU on it.
Yeah, right.
And you get it at Costco at a very good price. And it says kosher for Passover, and Baruch Hashem, many people call me about it. It says in Hebrew the name of a Hasidic rabbi that certifies it. It's a long story why, but it is fine. It is kosher for Passover. Okay. I just got this.
The ones I got had OUP.
Oh, you're right, it does have OUP on it. Before, it only had this element. That's right.
Okay. Let's talk about food products in general. Frozen fruit can be used for Pesach, as long as it doesn't have preservatives. Usually, the one that has preservatives is melons. It usually has like ascorbic acid, because they want to keep the color. So if you want to buy frozen fruit, just look at the ingredients, and as long as it's just frozen fruit, frozen pineapple, frozen mango, frozen strawberries, no problem. Without preservatives. As we said, frozen vegetables should have a special Pesach hashgacha. Now,
I was under the impression that a lot of the frozen fruit, depending on where it was from, you know, needed a hashgacha or not. Like, from Mexico or whatever, their cleaning process wasn't the same. Or out of the country, that's what it is. Like Chile, or out of the country, you know, their cleaning process wasn't the same as in the States. So if it didn't have, grown in USA, then it wasn't kosher as well.
Right. Some people feel that if they should be checked, like certain some of the berries need additional checking. Our policy is though that you could buy; it's reasonable to buy a frozen fruit. Okay, orange juice. So the problem really in supermarkets is that everything is processed. That's really the problem. And so it's very disappointing. What about this? What about that? Can I buy it? Because people are thinking, it's not bread, it's not cake, it's not cookies. Why can't I buy it? So the problem is almost everything is processed. All the oils are processed. They're cooked. If an oil is cooked and they cook chametz, then that oil becomes not kosher l'Pesach. So there's only two oils that are not cooked. Extra virgin olive oil. That's what's called cold press, and it's so pure that they don't need to cook it to get the impurities out. And there's it's called crude unrefined coconut oil. There's a spectrum makes it, and look, it actually looks white. That also doesn't need to taste the kashkocha because there's no additives and it's not refined. It's crude. It says on the jar, unrefined. And so those two can be bought without a Pesach extra. Now, there is a problem. The New York Times had an article that 60% of the American companies that say extra virgin olive oil are really not extra virgin because it's the most expensive olive oil and there's nobody that makes sure that it really is extra virgin. And sometimes they substitute other oils and claim it's extra virgin. So the only thing is I can't really comment on that. If you believe it's extra virgin, then you can use it without a Pesach hashgacha. People have different brands which they research and they tell me, this one really is. So whatever the OU says that their brands that say extra virgin really are extra virgin because they have added, which they do, they have a supervisor go there and check on it, which is better than some other companies that aren't. But our policy, though, is if it really is extra virgin, then it does not need a special Pesach hashgacha. Yes?
So if it has an OU, that's probably...
That's a safe way to go, yes.
But you should buy a new bottle. If you had one that
so anything that was open in a kitchen that was not kosher for Pesach, the custom of the minute would be to buy a new bottle. In theory, if you were sure, like sometimes it happens now that you just run out the week before Pesach and you want to open your Pesach one and pour out a few drops and your hand is clean and you close it and you're sure that no crumbs went in and no dirty hands were there, that's fine. But usually we assume that if something was sitting in a kitchen with chametz, we assume that it had some chametz contact. Unless, like I said, you were specifically careful and that it didn't come into contact with it. So that's as far as most items are cooked. Now our orange juice is cooked, unless you buy fresh squeeze. Fresh squeeze is no problem. But if you buy orange juice, your orange juice, pasteurized orange juice, is cooked. So the problem is they also cook chocolate milk, which is chametz, on the same cooker. They pasteurize chocolate milk. That's why some orange juices that are kosher, like the Publix one, has the OUD. Because first they pasteurize milk and then they pasteurize orange juice. So therefore, for a cooked orange juice, we recommend that it have a pea. So we do a kosher production on the Kroger orange juice.
It's in the store, right?
It's in the store. It has the AKCP on it. And even though there's a D on it, it is Tara. That's not our label. We didn't put it on there. They use the same label on all the Kroger oranges throughout the country. And somewhere in the country, in one of the 50 plants they have, they do dairy on the same line as they do the orange juice until somebody put a KD on. But the Atlanta Kroger orange juice is fully Tara's year-round. And the AKCP one is fully usable for Pesach. There's also some Tropicanas that have the kosher, sometimes they have it in Hebrew or they have the OKP. Or you can buy the non-cooked orange juice, the frozen one,
When you buy frozen concentrate, it's not cooked. They don't, that's how they kill the germs, is they either cook it or they freeze it. So when they freeze it, just make sure there's no additives, no citric acid, no just plain orange juice, and that would be fine as far as that goes. Now, the other problem with foods that are not processed is that they go bad. So what they do is they add preservatives. Most preservatives are not kosher with Pesach. They're mostly corn-derived. So most dried fruits have preservatives, and therefore we wouldn't use them for Pesach because they have those preservatives, unless they're in the book. There are a few raisin brands that are in the OU book, including the Publix one, and Dole, I believe. You can check our list. These raisins don't use that preservative, and you can buy them. Nuts. So nuts, check the ingredients. Raw nuts are fine for Pesach. Peanuts we don't use. There are different customs, but I don't know. Most people avoid peanuts, but the other raw nuts are acceptable for Pesach. You have to make sure it doesn't have preservatives, which would be, it's usually called BHT in oil. That would be the problem as far as a raw nut. Roasted nut obviously is not raw. Roasted means that they've cooked it in oil, so that wouldn't be kosher with Pesach because they've cooked the nuts in oil. Now, there is something called a midget pecan, which has a kind of bug. Believe it or not, most of the pecans come from Georgia. We have a lot of pecan plants. And there's a certain kind of bug that goes in there, and the way they kill the bug is they put it in an alcohol bath. But that's only midget pecans, not whole pecans and not half pecans. So really all nuts, all raw nuts are, other than peanuts, and midget pecans are fine. When they grind things, they put it in the grinder, and usually they don't have a grinder special for something. It gets used for many different things. And some of those things have chametz in them. So we don't recommend anything ground unless it has a Pesach hashgacha. So therefore ground nuts or ground spices need to have a pea. Whole spices, no problem. If you have a whole peppercorns or something, or whole, you know, if it's a whole spice, it's not ground, then you can buy that without a special Pesach hashgacha.
Store
have ground
nuts?
Yeah,
produce. Has walnuts. Have walnuts. Same thing. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
in the farmer's market, they have whole basil, tarragon, whole thyme. Those, do they need
that? As long as it's not ground. There's some spices that are in the seed category, the legumes category, like cumin. A lot of people don't use that, but as long as it's not in the kitnias category and it's whole, it should be fine.
Tarragon is like a long little leaf. So usually when you buy tarragon, it's cut into
small
particles.
As long as it's not ground and there's no additives, it should be fine.
So don't you have to check those also for body?
Sometimes. You have to research things a little bit, know what you're eating if you can. Yes.
I think that woman over there has been trying to get.
Oh, I'm sorry. I need to move over here. I'm not.
Really important question.
Okay.
Proof.
Okay. Yes, it is an important question. It needs a Pesach hashgacha because of the preservatives.
Okay, because I feel in the past, like the one.
The Triangle K one.
Yeah, it didn't in the past. I thought.
When there's not one available, they've sent people into that factory to find out. But I haven't heard anything new this year. At the moment, that's all I have information on. Okay, let me take a quick.
Must you put one or two layers under the plastic top? Like the
In the past, they didn't have plastic. And so, therefore, when they used paper, things would leak through. And so they would use several layers to avoid that. But a waterproof thing is sufficient. If you have a waterproof, you know, you don't have to multi-layer it necessarily. But there are sometimes gloves and tablecloths that have corn powder on them. And we avoid corn, but you can wash it off. You can wash off the corn powder. You can rinse off if you're worried about the gloves. Or usually the problem with the gloves is when you take your hand out, you know, then you want to, before you dip it into your matzo meal, you want to wash it off first because it might have the corn powder there. Okay, just two more things and then we'll let you go. Meat and fish. Three more things. Matzo, meat, and fish. So, eggs are kosher with Pesach, no problem. There's a custom to buy eggs and milk before Pesach. Why? Because they feed the cows and the chickens chametz. And we try not to benefit from chametz on Pesach. So the truth is, if you knew for sure that these are old eggs or old milk, you'd be okay. If it was laid, you know, before Pesach. The Kroger, the milk that we do kosher to Pesach is no problem, the one that has the AKCP. And if you want it, most people try to do the minhag, but if they run out, you're allowed to go buy more. It's just many people do have that minhag to try to avoid benefiting from the feed that they feed the chickens and the cows. We should, we'll see, I don't know, we're going to run out of time for pet food, I'm sorry. But, basically, there's a list for the pet food yet. Pets are not allowed to have the five grains, wheat, rice, oats, or barley, and basically you can look at your pet food and see if it has it. If it does, then even though you're not eating it, you're not allowed to own it or benefit from it. And if your dog is happy or your dog is fed, then you're benefiting from it, or your goldfish are fed. So you want to use something that doesn't have hummus in it. If your pet can't have an unusual diet, then you have to talk to Rabbi Feldman. Mm-hmm. Maybe he can sell the pet or something, or figure out some solution for you. But let's talk about shopping. The number one mistake in our places today is the supermarkets are very confusing. People put non-Pesach stuff down in the Pesach aisles, and they have varieties of non-Pesach stuff that looks exactly the same as Pesach stuff. One of the huge problems is that people that are not religious keep a Pesach Seder. It's wonderful. What's the problem with that? They go to the meat market and say, "Can I have a shank bone?" And so the guy at this meat market says, "Sure." Nobody uses a bone. Cuts them a shank bone and says, "Hey, this is a great idea." And the meat markets make shank bones that are not kosher, and they'll even write Seder bone, or they'll write shank bone. And they mean well, and it happens everywhere. We've even caught our kosher inside the kosher stores. People will go, well, they don't have the kosher shank bone. Somebody will go over to the, if you're not religious and you don't have to keep kosher, but you want a shank bone, they'll go over to the meat guy and say, "Hey," so the meat guy will label shank bone, and people think shank means something religious. But actually what shank means is hand. It's roya. Because Hashem extended his hand to us, so we use the outstretched arm, we get the arm bone, but it's nothing religious to have a shank bone. It has to be a kosher shank bone. So by mistake, though, some people could have bought a shank bone without a sticker on it, and in the kosher department, they used to give them away for free, so they didn't actually have a sticker on it all the time. So it was really confusing. So make sure your shank bone is kosher with Pesach. It's kosher. That'd be a good idea. But matzah, year-round, it's cheaper to make matzah from flour that's washed, bleach flour. And so many matzahs year-round are not kosher with Pesach. But they look the same as the kosher with Pesach ones. Make sure your matzah is kosher with Pesach. Wine, Manischewitz makes wine that's not kosher with Pesach. They use flavors, and some of the flavors are not good, so it just has a plain OU. But they make, for Pesach, the same varieties with an OUP. So that you can have wine, shank bone, and matzah, and all three either be not kosher or not kosher with Pesach. Wine, sometimes in heat, Israel, Baruch Hashem, their wine market is an ideal place for wine. It's a land flowing with milk and honey. Not all wine from Israel is kosher. They have some wine with Hebrew writing, but it isn't necessarily kosher. It's just a Hebrew writing. So first of all, if you buy wine from Israel, make sure it's kosher. And most wine is not, especially from Israel, is not necessarily cooked or pasteurized, which is fine. In fact, the better wines are not cooked or pasteurized. The problem is that if you have cleaning help or non-Jewish people at your table and they pour the wine, they could actually make it non-kosher. So if you know that in your house or around your house you have non-Jewish people, then you don't want to buy the wine that isn't cooked. And the problem is that each bottle will say it in a different place, Mavushal. Some will say it up here, some will say it here, some here, sometimes in Hebrew, some. If it says nothing, it's not cooked. It won't tell you that if it doesn't say that it is, that means it's not, as far as the wine. So you want to be careful with the wine. Matzah, as we said, not all matzahs are kosher with Pesach. And then also, we only use matzah that's the poor man's bread, flour and water. They make a matzah called egg matzah, which in Hebrew is called matzah ashira, wealthy matzah. And sometimes that's permitted for elderly people, or sometimes Sephardim use it. But a regular, healthy Ashkenaz person should not use egg matzah because it's not the poor man's bread. But again, that's available in the markets, and sometimes they're saying, it'll say in Hebrew, matzah ashira.
You mean not for the Seder, or not during Pesach?
Not during Pesach. Okay. So it's called Masa Ashira, wealthy bread. It just means wealthy. Anything other than flour and water is wealthy. Everything depends on how you look at it. Meat and fish. All raw, unprocessed meat and fish should be kosher for Pesach year round. But cold cuts and hot dogs, those are not pure products. That's not pure raw meat. They have fillers. And guess what? Gefilte fish is not pure either. They have fillers too. Have you ever noticed how it swells, like it rises like the chametz? And you buy the basic gefilte fish and it still looks small and fishy? That's because it doesn't have all that stuff that makes it grow. So you have to be very careful with things like gefilte fish and things like salami and things like cold cuts that they have kosher l'Pesach. You discover which things really have fillers in them. Fillers means like soy or wheat that makes it, you know, rise, and that's not kosher l'Pesach. Now the problem is that the same machine that makes fillers sometimes makes ground meat. So some ground meats are not kosher l'Pesach year-round. Now, technically, if you use it, it's okay because they wash the machine in between, but they don't necessarily do a Pesach clean out in between. So, technically, any raw meat, if you used it, is fine. Any raw meat other than ground meat is 100% fine. Ground meat, many people have the custom to make sure it has a kosher l'Pesach. All of our stores locally, a month before Pesach, go kosher l'Pesach with the ground meat also. But if you have it in your freezer from months back, many of us try not to use the ground meat if we know that they used other things in the grinder when they made the ground meat. Fish. Raw fish should be kosher l'Pesach. There's a problem with frozen fish. And the problem is that they don't want the fish to stick together in the package. In other words, let's say they have like 10 little pieces of fish, and when you freeze it all together, you'll get like one big hunk, and then it would break pieces, and it wouldn't be nice. So what they do is they put glaze, it's called glaze, where they dip the fish in a solution, freeze it, and then they put them all together. That's how they keep them separate. So this glaze could be not kosher l'Pesach. So what do? So if you have individually wrapped in plastic, so they didn't use the glaze because they wrapped it in plastic.
The Costco.
So the Costco, but we'll get there. You could let it thaw out and wash off the glaze. That's fine. Or there's certain ones that don't even use the glaze. So in the OU book, they list, I think, let me find the page. There's two in Costco. One is Alaskan and one is wild. I think the Alaskan one they say you have to wash off, and the wild one you don't. If you're not sure which one, you can call me.
So Alaskan one is individually wrapped.
If it's individually wrapped in plastic, it's fine. It's fine. You don't even have to rinse it off first. But if you're not sure, then just rinse it off, and then that would be fine. But that's a relatively new issue that they weren't aware of, that nobody necessarily knew that they dipped it in a solution, and some people put corn in the solution. But it's not a chametz question, and it's for sure nullified because it's less than a 60th. But if we know about it, we would rinse it off. So.
Yeah,
no. The coloring, they feed the fish when they're alive. They feed them like carrot stuff. The orange in it. So it turns them orange, but it's not added afterwards. The fish actually eat it. So it's okay. It's okay for Pesach. So wish everybody a kosher with Sameach.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.